The beautifully designed Allo 5 all-connected wireless speaker from Panasonic is portable and waterproof, so you can enjoy the tracks you love wherever you are.
Soaking in the bath.
Braving the British summer.
Singing in the shower. Well, trying to. And you can link the Allo 5 to other Panasonic all-connected speakers for incredible multi-room sound. Listen without limits with the all-connected wireless speaker system from Panasonic. Official speaker of Team GB. Available now from Currys, John Lewis and Panasonic stores.
Shit in here?
Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross, your FDH Lounge dignitary football talkers, as per usual. It's NFL Week 2. We are breaking it down for you. Week 1, not so great for yours truly. 6-10, 1-2 on my big three plays, 0-1 on my lock play last week. Kyle at 3-2, and we have before us a card today that is very difficult, I think, to break down. I am thoroughly intimidated. I have zero feel for this except for my lock game. I love my lock game more than I might have loved any game ever.
Wow. Ricky, great to be on the program. I don't think it's kind of an ominous start here to the show, though, when I want to yell at the dog saying, did one of you shit in the house? Because it smells right here at the old abode right now. It smells. And I know it wasn't me. I know it wasn't me.
Although, you're pretty sure it wasn't you anyways.
Yeah. You know where I live, obviously. Not that far from Cleveland Browns Stadium, as you know. Maybe that's what I smell.
Could be. I like how you tied that in there. Yes.
Well, I am a broadcast journalist, Rick Morris. You know that.
Yes, you are. A gifted one.
Yeah, oh, thank you.
And I know you have some thoughts, some overarching thoughts on Week 2 philosophy before we get started.
Yeah, I would just say, and I don't think this is breaking any new ground or anything ultra-scientific, but for me the thing is, if something happened in Week 1 that you didn't expect or is being overhyped, don't be afraid to go against the public. I mean, you know me, I don't need any excuse to go against the public. But, you know, trust what you thought before the season. Let's
right.
not let one result undo everything. So, you know, so many weeks are about going against public perception. But, you know, Week 2 is one where, you know, trust your preseason judgments, and I think you can do just fine.
Absolutely. I think that is the case, as always. And as we get into the Week 2 slate here in terms of the intensity necessary, I promise Kyle Ross on this show to be the metal leak to your TJP. I'll give you that.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, you know, you can be a Bucci, and we can go back and forth through the house now. I'm cool with that.
I am the Ibushi of handicapping. Thank you for mentioning that.
Oh, yes.
All right. Well, week two starts with a Thursday night game. It's going to be going off right about the time the show gets posted, so we'll kind of gloss over a little bit. 0-1 Jets at 0-1 Bills, 8:25 Eastern time. New era field. It's the new era of SmackDown, isn't it? Orchard Park, New York. And on the call, Jim Nantz, Phil Simms, Tracy Wolfson on the CBS and NFL Network simulcast. Buffalo is laying 1 in this one, down from 2.5 initially. I'm on the Bills just because, again, I look at the performances from last week here. The Jets showed me a little more than I thought they would, quite frankly. But we've talked about this early stretch for the Jets, how it's going to be kind of ruinous. I wanted to be on the Jets because I saw this as a winnable game, but I'm looking at it, and the Bills have really kind of had their number recently. And I'm looking at
these
two teams here. Yeah, it looks like a rise-up game for the Bills here. I don't think, based on what I saw last week, they're necessarily going to have a great win either, a great season either. But this one at home in kind of a must-win spot, I'll take them.
I, too, am on the Bills. You referenced their previous domination, 5-0 straight up and against the number the last five meetings, so that bodes well. It's interesting you mentioned that the Bills are now back to the role of favorite, laying 1 here. They had gone to a one-point dog as of this morning, even as high as +1.5. There was a huge flood of Jets money in the middle of the week, kind of as a response to the questionable status of Sammy Watkins. I do believe he's going to play tonight.
Questionable.
They're hopeful.
Yeah.
Okay, questionable. But I think I think it's one of those hopeful, you know, optimistically hopeful type deals is kind of what I had been reading. But with or without Watkins, I think the Bills could beat the Jets. These Thursday night home games, or I should say Thursday night games, always favor the home team, seemingly. And
right.
The Jets are a team I've earmarked for regression this year. So, I could see them absolutely at 0-2. And as for the Bills, I don't think they're quite as bad as they looked last week in Baltimore.
I agree with your macro thoughts about the teams right there, certainly. Up next on Sunday, 1 o'clock from NRG Stadium in Houston, also on CBS, the 1-0 Chiefs at the 1-0 Texans. Sparrow Dita, Solomon Wilcox on the game. Sort of a lower-rung announcing team on this game, which I find a little bit surprising. But you've got Houston. They opened here as a pick there up to -2.5. So a relatively short favorite at home. That is, I think, taking into account their recent history of being dominated by Kansas City, especially the last game they played in the playoffs. The opener last year, maybe not so much domination, but a solid win by the Chiefs. And I'm going to keep saying over and over and over again, I have almost no feel for this slate this week. I'm going to be on Houston, again, home team, that kind of tips the scales to me here just kind of slightly. I think obviously having Osweiler in there as opposed to the pile of dreck that Houston had when they were facing the Chiefs last year, that's going to make a little bit of a difference. Could be a little bit of a letdown for KC after that big come-from-behind win against San Diego last week. All things being equal, I will take Houston.
Yeah, I would lean towards the Texans. Not the official play. It's funny, they've gotten less than 50% of the total wagers, but the line did go up. So maybe
okay.
Some of the bigger money is on them right now. You do have to wonder just how big a deal Brock Osweiler means to the spread. I mean, he alone is not going to reverse 30-0, which is what the playoff score was last year. Houston's going
right.
to need defense to show up. They're going to need to force some turnovers. Kansas City, it's really interesting because they were dominated for three quarters by San Diego last week. Chargers were obviously a winner for me. And I was pretty disappointed to see them not win that game straight up, given what my expectations in San Diego this year. So, I just don't know what to make of the Chiefs quite yet, so that's why I'm laying off this one. I also don't know what to make of Houston because they kind of pulled away late from Chicago. So this is a tricky one.
It really, 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 really is. Yeah, I don't have much of a feel for these teams either. And, again, as a matter of fact, I went 1-2 last week. Both losses came in games involving these teams. So when I say that I don't have much of a feel for them, I'm just really kind of stating the obvious right now. Up next, the 0-1 Dolphins at the 1-0 Patriots. 1 o'clock Eastern time, Gillette Stadium in Foxborough on CBS. Greg Gumbel, Trent Green, Jamie Erdahl on the call. New England is laying 6.5 in this one, up from 4.5 originally. And if I was to try to get inside the heads of the wagering public, I would say that before Garoppolo went out there and looked very good Sunday night, there was probably a lot more doubt as to how big of a spread this one should be. And then, again, you get that reaction coming off of the Sunday night miracle here and how good he looked and the coaching job by Belichick, as much as I hate to give credit where credit is due there. But, again, I sort of went against the whole feeling, the inclination last week that Miami would get blown out. And I'm going to do that again just because they backed up what I thought way more than I thought that they possibly could. And they kept it close against Seattle. They really kind of showed me something. Yeah, having to go back to the East Coast after a game like this could be a little bit kind of draining. But Ndamukong Suh and the rest of those guys inside there, I don't know. They really, really showed me something, and I think they're going to be able to hang close here. So I'm going to resist the stampeding urge of the public and everyone to jump on the New England bandwagon and assume that this will be a blowout. I didn't assume the Seattle game would be a blowout. Don't assume this either. I'll say Miami covers.
I like where your head's at. I want to go there with you with the recommendation, but because the Dolphins covered last week, that kind of makes me a little iffy. If this got up to 7, I would certainly entertain the notion of the Dolphins a little bit more. You know, usually I, you know, getting a TD or more in a division game is always nice. But, you know, we shall see. Garoppolo had the whole summer to prepare for Arizona. He now only has a week to prepare for Miami. Of course, Miami's a much weaker opponent. I'm not big on Miami, so I'm not going to step out on him here and make a recommendation. But I will say, if you do play the game, I'm with you on Miami for all the reasons you laid forth.
Yeah, because I think, again, that New England getting that line inflated, I think that's a classic example of the week one overreactions that you're talking about as week two dawns on us here. Up next, battle of potential playoff teams in the AFC. They were playoff teams last year, and it's a revenge game for one of these two teams. It's the 1-0 Bengals at the 1-0 Steelers. 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Heinz Field in Pittsburgh on CBS. Past lounge guest Ian Eagle along with Dan Fouts and Evan Washburn on the call. This is a game where Cincinnati is getting a pretty steady 3.5 points here from the open to where it is right now. Of course, with Dan Rooney having a commissioner in his pocket, allegedly, Pittsburgh gets to play this game without Vontaze Perfect in there. Well, is it a coincidence that they're playing them during the Vontaze Perfect suspension? I think not. So, yeah, that's a very, very important factor right there. So Tagliabue taking care of his favorite constituency, I say, in the most non-bitter way
Paul
possible.
Paul Tagliabue's doing that? That's the reason that Paul Tagliabue's the one. Yeah.
Tagliabue, did I just do that? Oh, my God, I'm tired today. Oh, Goodell. Goodell. Yeah. A very dated reference on my part. I apologize. But look, in this spot here, Paul Tagliabue, you're going to have that one for ammunition for quite a while, my friend.
Yeah.
Next week you're going to be asking me if I'm going to be making a Burt Bell reference in any of the games.
Yes, yeah, but, really.
with the Bengals, I look at it here like, A, they're a live dog. B, it's a short week for Pittsburgh. So with that thing here, you got the hook at 3.5 points. I'll take the Bengals. I'm not at all sure they're going to win this game, but I think they can hang close enough to cover that 3.5.
I'm laying off this one. I'll give you reasons why you shouldn't play either team. One, Pittsburgh, you're right, is a little overvalued, coming off a huge national TV win that everyone saw. They dominated the Redskins. I know you were anticipating that. That was one of your three big plays.
Yeah.
I kind of said, you know, if there wasn't our favorite worth playing in week one, it was probably the Steelers. So, you know, that's always a thing. You know, teams off big national TV wins tend to kind of disappoint the next week. Not always, but many times. And the money, the sharp money at least, seems to be on Cincinnati here. As they've gotten only about 40% of the total tickets, but the lines come down from the opening number of 4. But Cincinnati had that great spread record last year. Last week's game kind of fell right in the number. Cincinnati's not a team I'm really interested in taking right now, although as an underdog, they're certainly more appetizing than a favorite. I thought of all the games last week, you know, there were a couple that didn't go the way I thought, but one that really went the way I thought was Bengals-Jets, with the Bengals winning a close one. I wasn't surprised. I don't think there's much reason to be concerned with them at all. This should be a close one between two of the best teams in the AFC, but I'm not making a recommendation this week.
I agree with that bottom line. Close game, two of the best teams in the AFC, no question about that.
I promise I will make some recommendations this week, though. I have some coming.
If you got one coming up in the next one, you got more cojones than I do, because then this next game is another one of these epitome of I have no handle on this slate games. The 0-1 Cowboys at the 0-1 Redskins, 1 o'clock Eastern Time from FedEx Field in Landover on Fox. Kevin Burkhart, John Oliver, and the delicious Pam Oliver on the call in this game here.
John Oliver's doing this game?
John Lynch, Kevin Burkhart, Pam Oliver. Did I say that wrong?
I thought you said John Oliver. I said, wow, I thought
no,
it was HBO show and keeping him busy. Okay.
Well, I thought I said Pam Oliver.
Okay.
Now you're getting in my head about how tired I am. You're just getting in my head at this point. Washington is laying 2.5 down from 3.5
initially.
You will
vote for Hillary Clinton.
At least I don't have the hill, allegedly. But in looking at
that's unfounded, an idiot.
Yeah. I'm trying to mainstream those rumors, Kyle Ross.
Fucking kidding me.
I look at this game I mean, both teams coming off of letdowns. This is one that's very, very hard to pick. The Redskins, I spoke of it last week, their difficulties in the trenches, which were exploited by the Steelers, in which I do think whether or not Smith at tackle is able to really go a whole game for Dallas, I still think with that offensive line and with Ezekiel Elliott that they can probably exploit a little bit here. A better than I expected week one effort from Dak Prescott. I'm going to take the points in this one. I'll take Dallas getting the 2.5 on the road in a game which, again, customarily I have no confidence like most of the rest of these picks this week.
You know, it's funny. You doubt, I wonder if this is the first one you have an opinion on or a recommendation. It is. I'm on Dallas. This is the first recommendation of the week. It boils down to the fact that I just don't think the Redskins are very good. And I don't see the Cowboys. You know, a lot of people are going to look at this game and say, Washington, two straight home games. What are they going to lose them both? Yeah, I think they can, quite frankly. I think Dallas is just a better team here. And the fact they're getting points is a luxury. I think Dallas wins the game straight up. Washington did not look good at all last week. All of, you know, people like myself who had been kind of beating the drum for Kirk Cousins' regression this year, you know, I think we're made to look kind of smart on Monday night because, you know, that first he should have had one more interception early and it was dropped. And I said, are you kidding me? How much interception luck does this Kirk Cousins have? And then he went on to, he threw two, I think he wound up throwing. But regardless, I think Dallas makes them pay. The Cowboys, you know, I don't think they need to hang their head over what happened last week against the Giants. I think they'll get the job done here. They could have easily won that game against the G-Men, whereas Washington was completely outclassed by Pittsburgh. And, you know, you're with me too, right? Washington is a clear regression team in 2016.
They are. They absolutely are. And
from 3 to 2.5, that's pretty significant. You know, people might say, there's some value now under a field goal with Washington. If the books are willing to move from 3 to 2.5, that tells you something right there.
It really does. You know, and
it means they don't want any more Dallas money is what it means. But they're probably going to get it because Dallas, no matter what, is a public team.
They are. They certainly are. You mentioned the Giants. We have up next, I've been referring to this off-air this week, as the Giants versus the homeless man's version of the Giants. It's the 0-1 Saints at the 1-0 Giants, 1 o'clock Eastern time, MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford on Fox. Five-time lounge guest Kenny Albert joined by Daryl Moose Johnston and lovely Pandora Oakman on the call on Fox. This is a game where the G-men are laying 5 points up from 4 initially. There had been a little bit of a stopgap at 4.5, so the money's kind of been flowing in that direction. Again, you're better than me at discerning whether it's smart money or dumb money. I'm not as good at, like most people, at picking up on that. But regardless, in this spot, I like the Giants to cover it. I think we saw from the Saints last week that they have, again, they're off the hook, I think, as far as having the worst defense in the NFL. We'll get to that with the Browns before, but that doesn't mean that they're not still a historically bad unit. And, again, when I say homeless team's version of the Giants, the Giants are excellent offensively and explosive, and their defense is meh at best, and the Saints are less than that on both sides of the ball. Give me the Giants to cover the line.
Are you aware of how many points the New York Giants have scored on the Saints defense the last two times these teams have played?
I know it was 51 last year. What was it the time before?
They have scored a total of 101 points against the New Orleans Saints the last two times. So that's a lot.
Oh, my goodness.
That's an average of 50.5 if you're keeping score at home. I don't think it'll be that many, but the potential's there for a blowout. First favorite of the year, I believe, here. I am going with the G-men as a recommendation. Kind of maybe goes against what I said earlier about, pump the brakes and what you saw in week one. Saints probably should have beat the Raiders, but they gagged late. Giants, maybe should have lost the Cowboys, but they got it done. And I how I feel about these two teams this year. I was one of the few, although I guess they are favored in Vegas post-Romo injury, to win the division. But I was saying before that Romo injury that the Giants were going to win the division, and I just don't think much about the Saints at all. The fact that they lost last week, very, very telling for what their 2016 season is going to be. I kind of view them as a 4 or 5 win team, quite frankly. I don't see them keeping up with the G-men.
Yeah, traveling halfway across the country, albeit only one time zone, but it's a decent trip miles-wise. So at 5 points, this is certainly one of the bigger favorites you ever laid in the history of the show. You take historically few favorites here. Team laying five is probably close to as big as you've ever gone.
Yeah, and I'm not worried about the move at all. Five is a dead number. It's considered a dead number in the industry. I will say that the line move happened early. There was a little buyback on the Saints at five, and it sat at 4.5, I think, for the last 2 days. But, yeah, it looks like it's back to five now. Obviously, I would have loved to get it at 4 or 4.5, but, you know, that move is kind of immaterial. And it's interesting that the Saints are drawing more tickets as the underdog. So, you know, if there is one kind of underdog, I don't mind going against it, the publicly backed one. So, you know, it's going to be a couple weeks, I think, for the public kind of catches on to how bad the Saints are this year.
We've talked about that earlier this year, but we've talked about that kind of for a couple of years. The public has been lagging on the thing with the Saints. The public still thinks it's close to 2009, and it hasn't been close to 2009 in, like, forever, as you and I well know. So,
yeah, and the thing, too, is we know – you know, even going back to 2009 to the team's heyday, maybe not that Super Bowl season, this wasn't the case, but, you know, for most of the Brees Peyton era, the team's offense production dipped significantly on the road, particularly outdoors.
That's right. That's right. And that even though it should be mild, that is still worth keeping an eye on. Up next, another team from the NFC South. It's the 0-1 Panthers hosting the 1-0 49ers, 1 o'clock Eastern time from Obama Veiled Out Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte on Fox. Chris Myers, Rondé Barber, and Kaplan Jennifer Hale on the call here. This is one where, strangely enough, the public is not overreacting to week one here. It's just the opposite, it seems. It is a 13.5 point line for the Panthers at home, up from 11.5 initially. Unless everyone is looking at, and again, the public is not generally sophisticated enough to bet heavily against a short week. That isn't enough to do it. But it's about as short a week as you'll ever get with a late Monday night game for the 49ers. Good chance of a letdown. You are no doubt going to chastise me here, Kyle Ross, because you were aghast at ever laying the number in a double-digit game. I'm going to take the Panthers here. They got a lot of frustration and hostility to take out on somebody. 49ers, wrong place, wrong time. I'll take the Panthers laying the 13.5. As the 49ers travel to the Eastern time zone, which is another one of your bugaboos.
Oh, yes, it is. This is a classic stay-away game for me. To be honest, I'm a little surprised that you're not surprised that I'm not going with the 49ers, but you kind of laid out that there's plenty of reasons not to go to San Francisco. They failed miserably in this spot last year. Remember, they pulled – there's something about that late Monday night football game that gets this team to play its best. In week one, they did it to the Vikings last year, did it to the Rams this year. And if I remember, I think it was the Bears they played in week two last year, and they got beat bad in a 1 o'clock start by like 30. I mean, the 49ers, when they lose, they generally lose bad. So I've got no interest in playing them off a straight-up dog win. But Carolina's a play-against team or don't play at all for me this year. They had that great spread record last year, and as you so eloquently put it, I don't lay double digits. 5 points is pretty high for me. 13.5 is out of the question. So I'm passing.
That would be giving you nosebleeds, no question about it. You're not going to do that. What's interesting, you talk about
wouldn't
a mirror kind of a game. Yeah. Well, first nosebleed's not directly attributable to Bolivian marching powder. Oh, it's Italy.
It's funny you mentioned my dog. Look at here again. I'm not trying to give my dog any PT here on the podcast, but I'm looking down at my one's cage. And, like, he, like, totally tore apart this mat we laid down here. You would think if I send you a picture of this cage right now, it looks like he's auditioning for a role in Scarface 2, the dog version or something like that. Just, like, white powder, this huge mound of it in his thing. He came running out. I said, well, that explains a lot, you know. So.
that sounds like a healthy situation for him.
What's weird,
if you're looking at the haven't had a dog in a good long time, but I do remember what that's like and their capacity to tear things apart.
Yes.
Strangely enough, in terms of mirroring, our next game is sort of like our last game with an unlikely team at 1-0 on the road against an unlikely team at 0-1. It's the Bucks at the Cardinals, 4:05 Eastern Time, University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale on Fox. The USA Today Sports Weekly says Tom Brenneman, and then it says Charles Davis slash Chris Spielman. I don't know what that means. And Peter Schrager on the sidelines. Arizona is laying 6.5, had been 7.5 initially here. So it's inside of a touchdown now at this point. I told you last week I had a gut feeling that I liked Tampa Bay more than Atlanta. I just wish I'd had the nards to go on that feeling last week here. So I'm not too surprised in my heart of hearts that the Bucks looked as good as they did last week. I don't think they're going to have enough to deal with. Again, you talk about a team that is going to be surly. Outside of the Cleveland Browns, which are a historically bad team at this point in time, is there a team that got undressed worse last week than Arizona? A game that they needed to win if they were going to establish themselves as a bona fide Super Bowl favorite in the NFC. Wrong place, wrong time for the Bucks here. At 6.5, I'm going to lay it and take the Cardinals.
So I believe this is one of three. Yeah, never mind. Really unprofessional broadcast today. Thanks to the dogs. Ricky, I apologize. I thought the one was going to come in. He ran away from the door. Fuck him. Hey, he can stay outside for the next 30 minutes. This is the first of three, I believe, before I was so rudely interrupted there, matchups where the dog is off a straight-up dog win and the favorite is off an outright loss is chalk. This is the only one of the three that I won't be playing.
Okay.
So you and I, when we previewed the NFC West, we had some reservations about Arizona, if I recall, both of us.
Yes.
And I think those came home to roost a little bit in week one. That's a game that Arizona, if they're going to be this 12-4, 13-3 potential top seed in the NFC this year team, they shouldn't be losing, and they did. So not a good sign. Show a little bit of sharp money on Tampa Bay here when you go show from 7 to 6.5. My only question with the Bucs is you mentioned, they look good. I watched a lot of that game, at least the first three quarters of it with Atlanta, and I'm like, you know, I was surprised, quite frankly, that the Bucs dominated the way they did. And I wonder if how much that had to do with the Bucs being better than we thought or the Falcons' defense just being awful. So I need to sit this one out to get a true feeling on the Bucs in 2016.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I'm so weary about much of this slate at this point anyways, I can't even tell you. But Seattle is not one of those favorites that lost straight up last week. They didn't cover, but they eked one out against Miami. They are on the road. The 1-0 Seahawks at the 0-1 Rams, 4:05 Eastern time at, for the first time in 20 years, the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum on Fox. Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Aaron Andrews on the call. And probably the only time that'll be on a Jeff Fisher game all year, I would wager. And Seattle is laying 6.5 in this one.
Jeff Fisher.
Up from 3.5 initially. The mustache tool taking it right in the grill on Monday night here. A short week. A Seattle team.
Who
that again,
said that mustache
talk about
tool?
Serving.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, well, I saw a pretty funny guy reference that on Facebook the other day. But the Seahawks in this spot here, I liken this to Alabama, right? So the Seahawks are not going to be surly because they lost like some of the other teams I've talked about. But much like Nick Saban being irate after Alabama's win last week, it's the same kind of thing here. The Seahawks are going to have something to prove after eking one out against a fairly poor team in Miami. The Seahawks are just going to let loose. I had a little bit of reservation earlier in the week about the Seahawks because I wasn't sure Russell Wilson was going to be able good to go after the state of his ankle Sunday, but he's not even on the injury list. So with that having been said, Seattle will roll. I'll lay the 6.5.
I got to lay off this. You could have gotten the Seahawks at -3.5 a few days ago. There were a few books who dared to hang a number before these injury statuses cleared up. But you're right, Wilson's back in the lineup. It'll be interesting to see because Seattle's probably, as bad as the Rams looked on Monday night, and they looked awful. I mean, they looked, their offense, holy Lord, was that bad. But the Seahawks are bound to hear, you know, the Rams have pulled some upsets on you in the past here in the Dome. Well, I guess it won't be in the Dome anymore. So, you know, hopefully, you know, maybe a change in scenery will be some better luck for the Seahawks there because, you know, they had trouble in St. Louis. They had some head-scratching losses through the years out there in the Dome.
They did.
So I'm going to lay off this one. I certainly do expect Seattle to play better than they did in week one, but how can the Rams not play better as well? Interesting.
Agreed.
Here, the total is down to 38. That is very low in the modern NFL.
It is.
I might go over.
So that's something
I might go over. Yeah, you know, and the over is a public bet, but man, 38.
The public doesn't think the Rams are going to score anything, obviously. Right, right. But on the next game, the first of our seven remaining, it's the 0-1 Colts at the 1-0 Broncos, 4:25 Eastern Time, Sports Authority Field at Mile High. In Denver on CBS, Nat Sims and Wolfson, the A-team for CBS, on the call here in the Peyton Manning Doesn't Live Here Anymore Bowl. It's a tough one. Denver is laying 6 up from 4 initially. I will take Denver just because, again, don't want to overreact to week one, but Simeon looked a little better than we thought he would look, and I don't want to overreact to week one, but I think that week one showed us a lot of what you and I have been saying for a while about the Colts, and that the Colts are a team that has a lot of holes, and to look the way they did against Detroit. Again, I don't want to overreact to that, but to me, it's confirming what we already thought we knew or sensed about the Colts. I'm on Denver.
Okay, yes, you're right about what we've said about the Colts. But A, I had the Lions last week, and B, the Colts can still lose this game and cover. This is one of those games where you have where you've got the dog. Ah, I guess it's different. I screwed that up. Oh boy, you're gonna need to do some work in that post production because I screwed that up. I was saying this freaking dog threw me off my game. Thanks a lot, pal. This is different. This is a dog that lost outright as a favorite taking on a favorite that won outright as a dog. We're going to have two of these games in the 4 o'clock witching hour here. And I'm on the Colts plus the points. The Colts with Andrew Luck have had Denver's number. And I am guarding against the overreaction of Trevor Siemian. The Broncos were very, very, very lucky to beat Carolina on Thursday. I think we're going to hear too much pro-Siemian stuff during the week. And, I wouldn't be surprised if this number gets up to 7 and there's some good value with the Colts. Luck played one of his best games last year against Denver. Remember that?
He did. I kind of feel like that's due to turn around because I think they got a whole much luck against lowercase L against Denver, but we'll see. Up next, it's the 0-1 Falcons at the 1-0 Raiders, 4:25 Eastern Time, Oakland Coliseum on CBS. Kevin Harlan, Rich Gannon on the call. Oakland is laying 4.5 down from 6.5 initially. I'm not taking too many dogs this week. This one makes me queasy, especially with the state of Julio Jones's ankle here, but this is a statement game for Matty Ice in his career. Coming off of what happened last week here, this was a chance to really kind of salvage the season for Atlanta. If they look as bad as they did last week, it's going to be a long year. I have enough faith in Matty Ice macro level that I'm going to say Atlanta covers the 4.5.
Yeah, I'm with you. Atlanta is another recommendation for me. They, like Indy, straight-up favorite, are a team that's off a straight-up loss as a favorite. They're now getting points against the team who's now favored and is off a straight-up dog of the win. So the situation is basically the same here as Indianapolis-Denver, and I will play accordingly. Give me Atlanta plus the points. And I did want to go back to that last game. Indianapolis has covered 9 straight times against Denver.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mark Lawrence, for that statistic.
Was that Mark Lawrence or Mark Lawrence that you said? I think you're getting your room blast and your sports handicapping mixed up there.
Whichever one you want it to be. Coming at you from the Fort Worth Specific Center. It's the 0-1 Jaguars at the 0-1 Chargers, 4:25 Eastern Time, Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego on CBS. Tom McCarthy, Adam Archuleta on this game. Jacksonville is getting 3 points up from 2.5 initially. You're going to disagree with me with the sentence that I am about to utter. The better team is getting points. Give me Jacksonville getting the 3 because they won't need them.
Yeah, Jacksonville's a pretty public dog this week. You know what I said about them earlier. So you said you were queasy about Atlanta, in the last one.
Yeah.
I'm not that queasy. I'm feeling pretty good about the points in Atlanta. I am queasy about this one. San Diego with a gag job in week one against Kansas City. An absolute gag job. And it's 2 years in a row I'm giving up on my most improved team after week one. Last year was Tampa Bay. They got housed by Tennessee in week one. They wound up still improving by 4 wins and matching the win total that was projected. But 11-5 with that kind of loss that we saw from San Diego last week probably ain't happening. But that said, I'm still going to lay the points. I'm going to trust my preseason view of this team and think they circle the wagon against the Jags team that, as you know, I think is overrated.
I know you think that. So this will be a referendum on what you and I think of these two teams this year and who's better.
Yeah.
I guess we're going to settle it on the field on Sunday, no question. Up next, the Sunday nighter. It's the 1-0 Packers at the 1-0 Vikings, 8:30 Eastern time from the brand-new U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis on NBC. Michaels, Collinsworth, and Tafoya on the call. This is one where Green Bay, a short road favorite. They are laying 2. That is down from 3.5 at the open. And this is one where, again, you left when I referred last week to Sean Hill as the bend-over, grab-your-ankles option for Minnesota in the short term. And I think you saw what I was talking about in that spot there. So there are no good options for them in the meantime, whether it be him, whether it be the still-learning the offense chief checkdown, whether it be anybody they pull out of the stands, quite frankly. I went for Green Bay in this spot, again, kind of a challenging game as we expected it would be last week against Jacksonville. I think, the team that I picked to be in the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl this year, Green Bay avenges what happened in Week 17. Give me the Packers.
I'm stunned this isn't one of your big three. This isn't one of your big three. I'll be honest with you, I want to go on the short road favorite here, but I'm seeing a troubling sign with the betting pattern, and that's kept me off. I really, really, really want to play this road favorite, Ricky, I'm telling you. But Green Bay is the most public side this week, but the number has come off 3 down to 2.5. I'm real nervous about that, so I'm laying off.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. This is, this is
home
a tough slate overall.
Home teams tend to struggle
with
new stadiums. Remember that.
Home teams tend to struggle in new stadiums.
So that's another reason to take Green Bay. I just don't like the betting patterns that I'm seeing here, and that scares me.
Well, you called that even before Bridgewater went down. So, yeah, teams in new stadiums, it is kind of tough. On this tough week, I still have to make my big three plays. We got the first of them right here. It's the 0-1 Titans at the 1-0 Lions, 1 o'clock Eastern time, Ford Field in Detroit on CBS. Andrew Catalan, Steve Kasker, Steve Berline on the call. This is a game where, and it's all about the line in this one for me, folks. Detroit is laying 6 points up from 5.5 initially. I'm giving a little bit more respect to Tennessee than I had at the beginning of the season here. My general rule of thumb is I will not take any shite teams in any of these games here, which I know goes against the way that you generally do it. So I'm saying for these purposes that they're not, that they're at the bottom of the barrel of the mediocre teams in the league right now. So I can justify making this pick. This is pure disrespect to the Lions. I just don't think the Lions are 6 points better, as I said to you in a text today, than Youngstown State. I think this is a big overreaction to them going in and beating a questionable Indianapolis team. This is a week one overreaction, Kyle Ross, Detroit laying this many points. They're not 6 points better than anybody in this league outside of the Browns. Who themselves are worse than Youngstown State. So give me the Titans in this one getting the 6.
I really want to agree with you, and I'm really so proud of you that you're taking the Tennessee Titans. But, I was reading right before week one, there are some people who I really respect that do think the Lions can surprise this year. And, I brought this up in our NFC North podcast. All the conventional wisdom says the team falls on its face on Calvin Johnson. Well, it scored a lot of points. Granted, against an indie team. Get the toilet paper out of your mouth, Kyle, that neither of us really like. But, yeah, I'm gun shy here, and I absolutely should be on Tennessee. I feel here because I do think it's a bit of a week one overreaction. But I'm laying off. The Titans burned me last week. They hold Adrian Peterson to 30 yards rushing. Don't give up an offensive touchdown, and they still not only lose but don't cover. That's your Tennessee Titans. Mike Mularkey stinks, by the way.
He does. He does, but Jim Caldwell is probably nothing to write home about either at this point. So as far as it, not exactly a battle of coaching titans in this game, no pun intended. Up next, Carter Blackburn and Chris Sims on CBS get the joy of calling this one. It's the 1-0 Ravens at the 0-1 Browns, 1 o'clock Eastern time from Cleveland Browns Stadium. I will still call it that, in Cleveland on CBS. And this is one where, again, I expect you to be warning me, shaking your finger at me here, because this is one where, again, you're going to say that anything that seems too easy, be careful of it. Baltimore started off laying 2 points. It went up to 7. It's back now to 6.5. That's all the justification I need. It's still out. It's still inside of a touchdown. If Carson Wentz did that to them, what's Joe Flacco going to do? A Ravens offense that looks more diversified in terms of receiving weapons than they've looked in many, many years, and the Browns struggle to cover anybody. This is a historically bad secondary, the bizarro world version of the 2013 Seahawks, if you will. Again, we saw it last week in terms of the absolute bottom of the barrel nature of this Browns team, particularly on defense. Baltimore, I take no pride or glee in saying this, are going to stomp my hometown Cleveland Browns here. I have no hesitation about laying the 6.5 at all.
I'm not going to pump my fist at you. I'm not. I know that a lot of times, especially in division games, I love to take home dogs of this size, but I'm not taking the Rams in that game against the Seahawks, and I'm not taking the Browns here. I'm laying off the game. I certainly would not take the Ravens just because of the price range. You know me. That's just a rule there.
Right.
So I looked at trying to justify the Browns, and I can't. The public betting is not as overwhelming as I'd like to see it, where it warrants a chance of stepping in and go against. Also, Josh McCown is playing this game.
Yeah,
I know. Didn't he beat Baltimore once last year? I feel.
I think
that they didn't.
I think the Browns won the other game. It was a big shootout with him. He put up huge numbers.
I think they lost
the shootout, but they won the other one.
Well, they lost the Monday night game. I know that. Yeah, they lost the Monday night. I think he played well in both games against him, at least. So that's kind of encouraging. But, yeah, the Browns are really bad. Like, I had them last week thinking it would be a rare win. And even though they were close before that safety that swung the game totally against the Eagles, their defense is so awful.
Well,
it is
in
so
our
awful.
Tiny scant time remaining, we're going to get to that as a segue to the Monday Nighter, because this is my 1,000-star gold-plated lock of the millennium for week two. Forget this millennium. I like this for the next 10 millenniums. The 1-0 Eagles at the 0-1 Bears, 8:30 Eastern time on ESPN, Soldier Field in Chicago. McDonough, Gruden, Salters on the call. Chicago's laying 3 up from 1 initially. Again, the unwashed masses, particularly in Philadelphia, they are ready to put Carson Wentz in the Hall of Fame. He will not be playing every week against the 2016 Browns defense, everyone. Just a memo to you here. He's going to face a real defense, not a great defense, but a legitimate NFL defense, for the love of God, and with John Fox coaching them, no less. You and I have been saying the public doesn't respect the Bears as much as they should. These factors collide. I love the Bears more than I've loved any team in any game in a long, long time. Give me the Bears laying the 3.
Yeah, this is a record. I'm with you. Last week we went against each other on the big pick. This week I'm totally with you.
Mm-hmm.
This is my favorite play of the week, and it is all sharp money that is responsible for that line move from -1 to -3 at Chicago. Chicago's a very sharp play this week and my favorite play of 6 that I'm making. I didn't think I would have 6 picks this week, but apparently I do.
6 picks, 3 favorites, no less. The Giants, San Diego, and Chicago, no road favorites. I haven't changed you that much in that respect. Dallas, Indianapolis, and Atlanta, my big 3. I've got Tennessee, Baltimore, and Chicago. This is like bizarro world here where you've got some favorites, and I've got the Titans. Who the hell did the Freaky Friday switch on us, Kyle Ross?
I don't know. Is it too late to ask you to go for maybe? I know I can't get you to go to Bernie Sanders ever, but, you know, the Tennessee Titans is a consolation prize for me.
Yeah, the Tennessee Titans are the Bernie Sanders of the NFL. I will concur with you on that.
Wait just a damn minute here, okay? And, hey, they're a lot closer to your buddy Rand Paul's the home state there.
Geographically, yes. Geographically, it's pretty clear. Rand Paul is from Bowling Green, Kentucky, which is not far north of the Tennessee border. So you know, props on your geography there, Kyle Ross, if nothing else.
Oh, you know, yes, I do know that Kentucky and Tennessee are right next to each other. Yes.
Yes, this just in. They are closely related geographically. We shall see how it plays out for week two. Should be an interesting slate. I'm hoping to rebound from 6-10, but I have no faith whatsoever that I'm going to do so. You're at a 60% clip already for the year. Some things never change, so we'll just keep barreling along. Thank you very much, Kyle Ross, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FBA's Lounge mini-episode number 757, previewing NFL Week 2.